Radio Bilingue presents a town hall meeting on the census count and the Voters' Choice Act in Fresno County. The town hall was hosted by Congressman T.J. Cox and California Secretary of State Alex Padilla and was recorded live at the Selma Arts Center on February 18, 2020.
Technical question, Secretary Padilla. One individual asked, how will no party preference voters' permanent party affiliation be handled after requesting a partisan ballot?
Okay, very good question. You know, I think in California, we've all gotten pretty used to the top two vote getter system, right? The voters of California changed the rules several years ago for most elections where, you know, when we go to vote in the primary, whether it's for Congress, whether it's for the legislature, whether it's for other statewide offices, you know, anybody can vote for anybody regardless of party. And the candidates that receive, the two top candidates that receive, you know, the most votes advance to November regardless of party. That's still the case, except for when it comes to voting for president in the primary, right? Because the national political parties have a say in the nomination process. So to really try to simplify it all, we created a one-pager and a short video called How to Vote for President. That's one of the tools on vote.ca.gov. And it takes you through the rules of, look, frankly, if you're a registered Democrat, you're going to have the Democratic candidates on your ballot in the primary. If you're a registered Republican, you have the Republican candidates for president in the primary on your ballot. That's the case for all parties, except for no party preference voters. But if you register to vote no party preference, what you're telling elections officials is, I don't want to be part of any party. And so if you don't do anything, the ballot you're going to get will not have presidential candidates in the primary because you're a no party preference. But that doesn't mean you can't vote for a presidential candidate, right? This is the question. What do you have to do? If you're a no party preference voter and you want to support a candidate from a party that allows what's known as crossover voting, that's the Democratic Party, the Libertarian Party, and the American Independent Party, you as a no-party preference voter can request that ballot from the county. So request it in advance if you vote by mail, or you can walk into any vote center and request it in person. If you're a no-party preference voter and you want to vote for a candidate from a party that does not allow for crossover voting, what we call a closed primary, you can still vote for a candidate, but you have to re-register first. So you can re-register, that's part of what same-day registration is for, or you can update your registration more easily. SB 207 was just signed by the governor to allow the counties to do it more easily. Re-register, get the ballot that you're looking for, and then if you want to re-register back after the primary, you can do that. The specific question was asked, if you're a no-party preference voter and you support one of the candidates, what happens to your registration? Well, if all you did was crossover vote, you stay an NPP voter. If you had to re-register to vote in a closed party primary, then that's your new affiliation unless or until you re-register back as no-party preference, and that's done easily either on paper or at registertovote.ca.gov. Long answer, I told you, but you can find the easy answer at how to vote for president, vote.ca.gov.
That was Secretary Alex Padilla. Well, Secretary Padilla, one more question for you. Actually, some of the questions that we have received have to do with the election security. And some of them are expressing concerns with the security of our elections and what's been done to prevent hacking and the manipulation of data. Secretary Padilla, can you provide an overview of the security procedures that are in place under the new election systems to ensure that the vote is safe?
Yes, thank you. Very important question. I know it's on the minds of a lot of people these days, and I'll put it in the following context, because when I was first running for Secretary of State back in 2014, 99% of the questions I got was, how can we get more eligible people to register to vote? How can we get more registered voters voting? And then 2016 happened, right? The 2016 election is when we first started hearing a lot about concerns, you know, whether it was foreign interference or cyber threats or anything else. And so the good news is California has kind of led the nation in this for a long time. So I'll give you just the basic overview of what we do to protect the security and integrity of our elections and our voting systems in particular. Number one, the systems that county use to administer the election, they can't just be off the shelf, right? They're not buying stuff on Amazon or whatever. The systems have to be tested and certified first that they meet the security standards that we require in California. And frankly, the security requirements we have are higher than what the federal government recommends and higher than any other state requires. Among the requirements we have of the voting systems are paper ballots. So in California, we use paper ballots and what's known as a voter-verified paper audit trail. Third, the voting systems that we use, the machines that we use maybe to mark a ballot or to cast a ballot or to count ballots, by state law, cannot be connected to the internet. So we make it impossible to systematically hack or rig the election. And even after all that, we want to be extra sure. So we require every county to conduct a post-election audit after every election. So if they're using machines to count, they're going to take a percentage of the precincts and count the votes by hand to make sure that the machine got it right. And so they have to make sure that we protect both the accuracy and the integrity of the results. There's a lot more to it than that, but that should give you an idea of the extent that we go to ensure that the security of the vote.
Yeah, if I could just take a little point of privilege here, and I think this is what you guys may be asking about, is how do you ensure that the voters voting are actually eligible to vote, i.e. that they're citizens? All right.
So I'll repeat, in case anybody here did not know this before, to vote in the United States of America, you have to be 18 years or older and a citizen of the United States, plain and simple. Right, with minimal exception, if you're 18 years or older and a citizen, you have the right to register and you have the right to vote. And I'll tell you, California ought to be proud because we have record high registration. We are nearing 20.5 million voters on the rolls. There's still a couple million more people who are eligible but not registered, and we're constantly doing outreach, but we have a record high number of people on the rolls registered to vote. I know there's the occasional question or concern about, oh, what about all that voter fraud? Let's be very clear. There's been numerous studies, numerous reports, numerous investigations, not just nationally, but here in California, and they all show the same thing. Voter fraud is exceedingly rare, which means our current safeguards are working
But that
doesn't mean that we don't take it seriously. Of course, we take the threat of fraud seriously. And so anybody who has specific information or evidence or proof, there's a place on our website where you can register a complaint. And we have investigators that will pursue specific leads and either bring something to the Attorney General's attention or a district attorney's attention, but we need specific information if you believe there's voter fraud that warrants being investigated.
Continuing on that topic, actually, contrary to popular rumors, popular misinformation, actually, immigrant citizens are actually some of the most committed citizens in our communities, in our society. They're very responsible at the time of voting, and they have a high, actually, turnout when it comes to vote now. To do that, of course, our citizens, immigrant citizens, need to have the proper information available. How can we increase, Secretary Padilla, how can we increase language access to ballot materials, especially in Punjabi, as this is the third most spoken language in the Central Valley?
Yes. Good. Again, a great question reflecting the beautiful diversity that is the state of California. So for starters, there's a federal Voting Rights Act, right? It's been federal law for decades now that if there are certain concentrations of people who prefer a language other than English, but they're citizens and they're eligible to vote, then that voter registration information needs to be available in those additional languages. And election and voting information, even ballots, must be available in those additional languages. That has been long-standing federal law. In California, because we have resources and expertise through our UC system and otherwise, including demographers, we've been able to do more granular research to be able to expand those same options for additional languages based on what we think is even better data than what the federal government is sharing with us. So Punjabi is one of the languages that is required in places like Fresno County, where you have a significant population in Los Angeles, Orange County, for example, Santa Clara County, big Vietnamese populations. Fresno County, the Hmong community is pretty big. Same thing with Sacramento. So as you look county by county, there's different language requirements that the Elections Department has to make information available in.
Anything to add, Congressman Cox?
No, as we were saying before, is that the certainly when we're talking about, I think we're talking here on the voting side, which is really the state and local issues with regard to the different languages. When back to the census, keep in mind that the census is going to be put out in two languages, Spanish and English, but available online in 13 different languages, including Punjabi and Hmong.
One more question. We have a question about ballot collection procedures. What protections are in place to prevent misuse, and what reforms were included under the Voters' Choice Act in this respect?
So, again, I know there's the first thing I should say is the Voters' Choice Act empowers voters by giving voters multiple options for how to participate, right? For some people, being limited to one day or one location was challenging, and so now you have 11 days. You pick when is convenient to you and where is most convenient to you to be able to participate. If you prefer to vote by mail, again, in California, that's your right. You can receive the ballot in the mail, and you choose how to return it. If stamps was an issue in the past, that's no longer an issue. You can return your ballot through the mail. I'll remind everybody to sign the back of the envelope when you return the ballot. Otherwise, the county's going to have to come looking for you after the election. So sign the back of the envelope. That signature is one of our important security measures. Or if you want to drop it off in person, again, you have multiple options as to where over the course of 11 days. Or if you trust somebody to return the ballot for you, that's your right too. And it's not limited anymore to just a spouse or another family member in the same household.
Yeah, and certainly the point about the signature on the ballot, every one of those is checked, is that correct?
Yes, so the signature verification is one of the procedures as part of processing vote by mail ballots. So counties now have additional work to do after the election. If the signature does not match or the signature is missing, there will be attempts to contact the voter to see if this was indeed their ballot that was returned and to rectify any signature issues that there may be before they finish counting the votes and before we certify the results.
Yeah, because certainly there is a case that we had a voter last year who called up and said, hey, my vote wasn't counted, and it turned out that the fellow had had a stroke, right? And he didn't have the cognitive functions to basically recreate his signature. But that was corrected, and his ballot was eventually counted.
That's great. And by the way, all this is very transparent, right? We got nothing to hide. We're proud of the accessibility and security of our elections. If there's anybody here who would be interested in observing the county as they're processing ballots and counting on election night, they're open. So come on in and take a peek. So,
well, I would like to thank Congressman T.J. Cox and Secretary Alex Padilla for being here in this town hall meeting. I would like to acknowledge also the presence a few minutes ago of Councilwoman Jewel Hurtado. She was here with us.
Thank you. You are listening to a town hall meeting with Secretary Alex Padilla and Congressman T.J. Cox, recorded live by Radio Bilingüe at the Selma Arts Center on February 18th.
And we're coming to the end of this gathering, of this community forum. I would like to, as a matter of conclusion, I would like to ask Congressman T.J. Cox and Secretary Padilla to provide some final words, words of reflection about our topic today, which is the census count and, again, the new election procedures in California and particularly in Fresno County to make our polls more accessible to our people. Let's begin with you, Congressman T.J. Cox.
Well, thank you again for everyone for coming tonight. Thank you so much, Sam, for in Radio Bilingüe. I know that you'll help. This was a recorded town hall, and to get this critical census and voting information out to the public. Certainly, you know, everyone out here can become a voting and a census ambassador. And so please be sure to share tonight's information with your friends, your families, your coworkers, all your acquaintances, so everyone realizes just how important it is, the census, and how the system will work. And I don't know if we talked about it, but and if there's still people from the census available in the lobby there, I believe the Census Bureau is still hiring, mm-hmm. All right? And I think these are well-paying, part-time jobs, very flexible. So if you need to earn a little bit of extra money between now and at least through July and maybe past then, I would hit them up and see what is available now. Nice part-time job, especially for some of our young men and women to get out there and, you know, and have a little fun in public service as well. So thank you so much. And once again, I will say in every forum that we're at, and I'm very serious about that, I and my entire office, we work for you. We've shown that with the casework, with what we've done last year. Like you said, $450,000 returned to 100 constituents. And that's $4,500 a piece, basically, that we've returned to people. We've got great cases of where somebody has called in, their Social Security's been deducted, they weren't getting what they deserved, phone calls from our caseworkers, and all of a sudden they're getting $10,000 or $20,000 back. That's what makes us really happy, and that's what the number one job we're here for. We're busy working on the things that matter to the people in the Central Valley. We've got two water bills that have already made it through committee, one for disadvantaged communities and one to fix the Frank Kern Canal. Very, very important bills out there. We're working on health care access, clean air, and so many things, veterans benefits. I think Jesse is here, and let me just take a point, is that Jesse here, a vet, was at one of my very first town halls, and he got up and he asked a question. He goes, Congressman, you know, you've been in office for 2 months now. You haven't done squat. All right. What are you doing about the unacceptable rate of veteran suicide? And I said, listen, I don't know what, I'm not doing much now, but I'm going to get on it. And Jesse kept on, I don't want to say bugging me, but he kept on this issue, writing in, contacting office when I was over in the district. And, you know, we decided, we said, hey, we can do something about it. And so in last year's National Defense Authorization Act, we got $10 million more added for post-traumatic stress therapies for so many of our troops, right, that are suffering from PTSD and TBIs, traumatic brain injuries, right? And so, and the way that he contacted me, first of all, was a town hall. So we're going to continue doing these. We made the pledge to do a town hall at least once a quarter. It's my job to serve you. So thanks again for everyone for coming out.
Well, Secretary Alex Padilla, thank you for your visit to the Valley.
Thank you. It's a return visit. I'm going to keep coming. I think that was a happy Valentine's to the veterans, yes.
Well, thank you so much. We did Valentine's for the veterans, and what, over 1,000 cards delivered. That was very great for so many of the young men and women who wrote those out there. Very nice gesture.
Actually, I think that's one of the great ways to begin to wrap this up, because you weren't talking about an election day, right? You weren't talking about the census. You were talking about a town hall, that ongoing engagement. When we talk about democracy and civic, not just civic responsibility, but engagement, I think too often we get caught up in just the numbers, right? When is the election day? How many people registered? How many people voted? And then what were the results? That's important, right? That we determine who our representatives are that way, what the public policy priorities are going to be for the federal government, the state government, our local governments. But the sign of a true, strong democracy is what happens between elections too, right? When was the last time we showed up at City Hall? I know the council meeting is going on right now to talk about something on the agenda. How many times have we talked to our school board members, if you care about the schools that our kids go to? When was the last time we showed up at a town hall? All of you get a thumbs up tonight because you were here, right? We got to keep that ongoing engagement between neighbors, with community organizations, and holding your elected representatives accountable. So to me, it warms my heart to see how many people came out on a Tuesday after a three-day weekend this close to the election to come listen to us. So keep it up, because you're now all ambassadors, right? Everything you learned here tonight about the upcoming election, do I need you to share it with your friends, with your family members, with your neighbors, with your coworkers? Make sure everybody votes either early or on March 3rd. And just when they think, okay, those ads are going away until November, right? Well, don't forget about the census. We all need to participate in the census too. And now you're all census ambassadors as well. You're going to go home and say, you can do it by phone. You can do it, you know, on paper. You can do it online. And March 15th, check your mailbox. April 1st, there's a lot of events, but get it done early. And don't let up until everybody in your community is counted. So thank you for the warm welcome back to the Central Valley. I hope to see you again soon.
Thank you for being in Fresno, Secretary Padilla. And I would like to underline that we are all ambassadors of the vote. We're all ambassadors of the census. It's not enough to get ourselves counted. We need to go out there and get others to be counted. And we need to go out there and encourage the vote. So thank you all for coming to this town hall meeting on the census and the elections. I would encourage you to listen to Radio Bilingüe and the broadcast of this community forum on Radio Bilingüe. This is Samuel Orozco. Before we conclude this special tape-delayed election and census broadcast, here is some tips for voters in the Fresno County and Madera County areas. Be aware that the ballots have a new look. They have a different size, and you will now fill in inside the ovals. There are 24-hour drop-box locations in the different counties. They will be open until 8 p.m. on election day. If you return your ballot by mail, you will not need postage. Be sure to mail your vote by mail ballot by February the 27th. All vote centers are open beginning Saturday, February the 29th, and in Fresno, 10 vote centers open earlier, beginning on February 22. Vote centers are open on weekends. In other words, mail it, drop it, or visit. Voting in the elections is easier now in California. Now, attention voters, be sure to sign and seal your return envelope and do not give your unsealed ballot to anyone. One more thing. If you're a registered no party preference voter, your enclosed ballot has no presidential contest. In that case, you have three options. One, vote with no presidential candidates. Two, request a ballot for the American Independent, Democratic, or Libertarian presidential candidate. Or three, re-register to vote for a Green, Peace and Freedom, or Republican candidate, in which case, the deadline already passed. If you have any questions, call 559-600-VOTE, 844-977-8683. And I repeat, call 559-600-VOTE or 844-977-8683.
This has been a town hall meeting on the census count and the new voting system in Fresno. This broadcast is a production of Radio Bilingüe. Support was provided in part by listeners of Radio Bilingüe. This program was recorded live at the Selma Arts Center on February 18, 2020. Sound technicians are Jose Moran and Jorge Ramirez. The production assistant is Maria de Jesus Gomez. Special thanks to Araceli Garcia Munoz and Gilbert Felix from Congressman Cox's office. Samuel Orozco is the executive producer. This is Radio Bilingüe.